Well, we don't have Ed Miliband with us, but we are joined by Liam Byrne, the Shadow Welfare Secretary. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
I want you to avoid critiquing the Conservatives, the Coalition's welfare policies, because we've had a lot of debate about that.
So let's talk about yours.
Do your best. But tell us what you think is sort of most important in this speech today.
First, the way to put the system back on the even keel for the long term is to get people back to work. So you're absolutely right to highlight that core argument. Long-term worklessness is now at the highest level for 16 years. We've got to do more to get people back into jobs, and that's why we're saying, look, people should only be allowed to spend a couple of years on JSA, and at that stage they should have to get a job. And you're right to say, we're also saying we'll invest in helping make sure those jobs are available. Second, we do think that a cap on structural social security spending is a good idea because it forces you to make some long-term reforms. And what Ed's doing today is he's setting out what Labour sees as the Labour way to do this. So we're saying we spend £30 billion on tax credits. That bill's going up, not least because of levels of low pay in many firms. So if we did more to actually force through a living wage in different parts of the country, you could bring that bill down. But we're also saying, as you rightly highlight, the housing benefit bill is going up and up and up. We're spending 95% of the money we spend on housing benefit, and only 5% on building houses. That doesn't make sense. And what a lot of councils are saying to us is that if they had more power to regulate and control prices in the private rented sector, they could create some savings which we could recycle into building more homes. And then finally, we've got to do something about raising the employment rate amongst disabled people. The current ATOS assessments are failing very badly. You're 10 times more likely to end up in court than you are in a job. And I'm afraid that isn't good enough. So we need some fast and fundamental reform of those systems too.
Okay. Can I ask you just to give a very brief assessment of what you think the last Labour government did wrong, because clearly it is a pretty big change in direction. This government's trying to change direction. You want to change direction. I mean, it starts in a sense, doesn't it, with a sense of what you didn't do when you were in office. So what's your analysis now of the last Labour?
If I was reliving, you know, if we were going through that period again, I suppose there are two things that we would have done differently, in my view. One is that I think we would have moved faster on incapacity benefit reform. So it's a highly sensitive issue. You've got to do it carefully. The government, frankly, is making a mess of it. But I think we should have moved faster on that. And second, I think we should have done more to put the something for something back in the social security system. And one of the really important arguments Ed's highlighting today is that a lot of people feel they put a lot of money in and they don't really get much back out when they need it. And that's especially true for working parents, and it's especially true for people in their 50s. And so we're just beginning to float a few ideas today about how those who put more in do get more out, particularly support that might help them get back into work and retrain for a different career if they lose their jobs.
Right. Well, let's look at some of the proposals here. And I'm assuming, by the way, that these are not detailed policy yet. These are approaches that you're outlining.
Correct.
You're not pretending that the flesh has been put on the bone.
That's exactly right. These are the principles that will guide Labour's approach to long-term social security reform.
Right. Now, I mean, one of the things and one of the areas which is a sort of a bit difficult for you is, of course, that times are going to be financially constrained. That much has been, you know, agreed by everybody. Mm. And quite a lot of the proposals look like they involve spending more money rather than less, or at least spending more in the short term rather than less. Because, for example, if you want to deal with the problem of low pay in order to save welfare support for the low paid, and if you propose to pay companies to pay their workers less, that's more money, not less money, isn't it? And there are a number of other things. If you want to, for example, build more houses, I mean, obviously it's not quite the same kind of extra spending, but that's more money rather than less spending, isn't it?
Mm, great question. So if you take, for example, low pay, lots of people say to us, look, why are we subsidising low pay with tax credits? And I think people have got a point. And so you can deal with this partly by tackling abuse of 0 hours contracts, tackling abuse of the agency workers' freedoms too. But the idea of living wage zones is that you bring employers together to say, well, look, if you're prepared to put people on a living wage, which in London is about a third higher than the national minimum wage, over the course of time as savings are made, we'll recycle some of those savings into helping you upgrade skills and upgrading capital equipment and basically making your firms more productive. So you're right to say there isn't upfront money to prime the pump, as it were, but there is a shared savings way of doing things. Same is true on housing benefit. A lot of councils are saying, if you take my home council in Birmingham, they spend about 200 £200 million on housing benefit in the private rented sector. And what councils like Birmingham are saying is, look, if we had some more power to regulate the private rented sector, use some kind of collective purchasing, we could drive that bill down. And what we could then do is use the savings to help build more social housing, which would bring rent levels down over the long term.
I think there's been some scepticism about whether that's going to make any difference. I mean, if you reintroduce rent controls, it might make a difference, but you're not going to help the long-term problem of supply by capping rents and making it less profitable to build and to produce rented accommodation, I wouldn't have thought.
But these are medium-term changes. These are not knee-jerk, overnight success stories.
Are you talking about a regulated rental sector, the reintroduction of rent controls and the like?
I think that might be going a bit far. What we're saying is that local councils are saying that they've got lots of ideas for how they can make savings, and they'd be prepared to kind of crack on with that if there's a promise on the table to share in the savings to build more houses. But I guess it's the reason that we're saying that a long-term cap on social security spending makes sense is because it forces you to engage in these long-term reforms. And these long-term reforms are quite a contrast to the kind of knee-jerk, salami-slicing, strategic approach the government's taking.
Long-term reform, no one's going to disagree with that. What happens if you have a cap, say, measured over a three-year period, and in the end of the second year, you can see blatantly you're going to breach the cap? Where would you be looking to claw back the savings? I mean, is it going to be tougher eligibility requirements? Is it going to be reductions in the level of benefits for those who might have expected to get quite generous benefits?
I think this is at the core of the debate.
Yeah.
And what we're saying is that if you've got a long-term cap, it forces you to plan ahead and grip things that are not working. So I'll give you an example. The work programme at the moment, we know, is not doing especially well. Now, at the moment, the government, arguably, is taking a bit of a hands-off approach to sorting that problem out. If you've got a cap on social security spending, I'm afraid you just don't have that latitude. You've got to get a very quick handle on things.
But I fear you haven't really answered the question as to where you look to sort of claw things back if towards the end of the cap it's not going to... Because the cap isn't a target, as I understand it. It's different from a target, isn't it? That you're allowed to breach a target and you say, well, that's disappointing, but a cap is a cap.
A cap is a cap, and obviously you set your social security budgets each year within that cap. But what a long-term approach forces you to do is not let problems lie. It forces you to get absolutely stuck into fixing things.
And doesn't avoid the difficult decisions,
avoid the difficult decisions. But what it does force you to do is actually get a grip on stuff that, frankly, is failing.
Now, what this new approach to welfare—let's call it a new approach to welfare—and let's assume that you can put flesh on all these sort of ideas that are out there. They're not going to get you out of some very ordinary decisions that have to be made and that the current government is going to confront you with. I mean, most notably, they have removed child benefit for higher rate taxpayers. Is that something the Labour Party believes is a good idea or a bad idea?
If we were in office today, that is not a change that we would have made. We think it's the wrong idea. But we are being completely candid that the inheritance in 2015-16 is going to be bleak. The budget that we inherit is our starting point. Any changes we make to that budget have got to be fully funded. We're going to be introducing some quite tough long-term controls on social security spending, a triple lock, if you like, which means a two-year limit on JSA,
So basically,
cap.
Child benefit for higher rate taxpayers, it's not coming back under Labour, is it? It's gone now.
Can't make any changes that are not fully funded.
Okay.
And this is a couple of billion quid. That's a large amount of money.
Got it.
And there's a there will be a big queue of things that we want to get done.
Of course. And just one other quick one. I mean, there's been a bit of a debate about whether people who have more children than they can support themselves, than they could reasonably have expected to support themselves, whether how much generosity the benefit system should bestow upon them. Would you ever agree with the idea that people who have, say, more than two children should get no more benefit than those who stick with two?
I personally think it's a very bad idea because, look, one of our proudest achievements in government was lifting 1 million children out of poverty. All that good work is being undone by this government. And what we should be doing, frankly, is helping parents work. And indeed, one of the things Ed is talking about today is how we do more to help low parents prepare for work as their child approaches school age. So, look, child poverty remains a great cause and crusade for the Labour Party, and we're not going to back away from that.
Liam Byrne, thank you for joining us this morning.